Fables. This is the fifth test cast that I'm doing. I'm here with my sister Jessica, and we're picking a topic of it's okay to be wrong. So I told my sister the story beforehand. I mean, she was there when I was experiencing it firsthand. So this is a story that's kind of gone throughout my entire family, and it's referred to as the kicking pants story. Now, it's a story about teenagers who kind of make mistakes because they're kind of cocky back in the day and you don't really know much better. So let me begin. We were all sitting down around a dinner table, right?
That was me and my mom.
Yeah. And my mom was going into a story about the fact that she was on the drill team when she was in high school. A point that my sister and I both were laughing at her about, because we're like, you're on the drill team. And she's like, yeah, I can still do a lot of the same stuff that I used to do back in the day. And like, she used to do twirling and high kicks, and I don't know if she was thrown up in the air. But it was, we were focusing on high kicks that time, and she's like, yeah, I can still do high kicks. Jessica and I, if you remember, we were laughing at her for it. Like, we were just like, no, that's not true. No, like, you can't do a high kick. So what ended up happening is that, like, as a teenager, you need to prove a point, but you have to go beyond just proving the point. You need to be exaggerating and be like, okay, you can't do it. And my mom's like, okay, you know what? I would be able to do it. I don't have the right pants on. And for some odd reason, I felt compelled to stand up right at the dinner table as we're just sitting there and go, right pants, come on. Like, you don't need the right pants. You just can't do it. I'll show you how to do a high kick. Well, back then, I had the unfortunate choice of having baggy pants. So as I lifted my leg with all of my might to throw towards the sky, the crotch caught. And as the crotch caught, I went with it, my other leg. And the next thing I remember is being on the floor and them standing around me laughing their asses off. And yeah, and my mom just looking me in the eye and going, yeah, you need kicking pants. So the point of that story is that basically that it's okay to be wrong. There's a lot of times in our lives that we do make mistakes and you kind of own up to it. And that story right now is a story that kind of look back to fondly because it's funny. I know it was my mistake ultimately, but it's... And this is also one of the reasons I brought my sister along, is because if there's anyone who knows your faults and knows when you make mistakes, it's your sibling. It's just kind of one of those things that you remember all the little things. I had hard time like remembering. Of course, I make mistakes. It's just like these really kind of catalyst type moments where it's like, oh, that one. I'm sure she can detail it out, but yeah.
So I think, you know, what the kicking pants story really shows us and shows everyone that in a very small way, you know, Matthew landing on his ass was probably one of the easiest lessons in life to realize it doesn't take much to be wrong and to take much to be proven wrong. And, you know, Matthew kind of illustrated and talked about the fact that, you know, sometimes you're really, really, what is the word? Confident in your point.
Yeah.
And then you wind up with your crotch catching you and you fall on your ass.
Right. I mean, it's like the best illustration for a point.
And as much as Matthew, you know, probably didn't go into too many details at this time, he was, 14?
I was 14. So
14
years
old.
I was full-blown teenager.
Yeah,
so
just going right into high school and just thinking, you know, like, I'm the shit. He just wiped out.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think this topic is a very interesting one. And Matthew can probably attest to this. I'm a very driven but very stubborn person.
Mm-hmm.
And so the topic that, you know, it's okay to be wrong and, you know, it doesn't end up in always with you, you know,
right,
landing on the floor. But there's been a lot of times where I feel that, you know, my decisions might not have been the right ones, or my logic behind something just wasn't even accurate or correct.
Right. I think it's for both of us when growing up, it's just, it doesn't really matter if we were wrong or not. It's just to stay with the point that we had at the beginning. Like,
yeah,
at some point you're starting to argue a point that you know is just going downhill really quickly.
And, you know, we had the fortunate parents where my dad is like a pretty logical but also patient and has a very odd sense of humor that he would completely let us argue our completely wrong point until we were blue in the face. And, you know, his one point of logic would blow ours out of the window.
Right.
So there was definitely a large amount of humility in our household, which is probably why both of us can sit here and do this podcast without too much embarrassment or shame.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think it's like one of the big things I think is like definitely for stuff like at school, especially when your teacher's kind of telling you something that that you know is either is not incorrect, but it's just not what you necessarily believe, or you think in a totally different way. It's just being able to accept the facts, like being able to accept the facts that maybe I was kind of misguided in some way.
So actually, speaking of school, that kind of brings up one of my times where I, you know, looking back, knew that it was okay to be wrong. And out of high school, I was pushed to go to community college.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't necessarily my first choice. You know, I definitely wanted to go off to university and enjoy the four-year life.
You were the one who wanted to actually go off to university.
I wanted to leave with all my might. And that was not the choice that it was afforded me.
Yeah, it wasn't in the cards at the time. Not that you didn't get in, but it's just...
I didn't get into the schools I wanted to. I was, you know, I did not like math in high school, which is even more funny because I'm a tax accountant now. But, you know, out of high school, I went to community college, and I thought, you know, I'll pull straight A's, I'll volunteer, I'll get a job, and I'll go to whatever university I want to. And
I think everybody has that conception when they
I did it. That's what I did. I went to community college. I after some meandering with my majors, I figured out I wanted to be an accountant at some point, and I busted my butt with those grades, and I had a part-time job. I was active on campus. I had everything going for me, and I really wanted to go to Berkeley, Stanford, or USC. And that was something that was really huge for me. It was a point of pride. It was a point of, you know, I've worked my butt off, and, you know, I felt like I felt that community college was such a, in my head, completely in my head, was such a, what is the word? It was such a downgrade from a university, and it was something that I did not want to do and never had planned on doing and didn't even honestly know of its existence until my senior year, and my father was like, you're not going off to four-year college because you don't even know what you want to do yet.
Right.
And so I remember coming to my parents and telling them, you know, like, I'm applying for these schools. This is where I want to go. And my dad's like, are you applying to CSUN, which is a local state university? And I got there, I got in to CSUN out of high school with even my crappy grades then. I just never thought of CSUN as a good school. I never thought of it as worthwhile.
Yeah, it's,
I never
thought Cal State Northridge.
Cal State Northridge. For those not from Los Angeles County. So it's a local university that most high schoolers matriculate into if they don't have either the grades or the ambition to go elsewhere.
Yeah, it's some place that in this area there's a lot of people who kind of move there from local high schools, or it's just a commuter school.
Right. It's a very big commuter school, and it wasn't the place I wanted to be. And a lot of it came from my misconception of the university. So anyone that's listening to this and has a very large affinity for CSUN will get to that point, because I do as well. But I sat with my parents and told them I wanted to apply to all these schools, and I was completely stubborn and hard-headed and saying, you know, like, I'm going to this. I don't care how much it costs. I don't care about anything. Like, I will, you know, not stop working the rest of my life just to pay for this undergrad degree. And I remember, again, very hard-headed and being straightforward and telling my parents, no, like, this is what I'm doing. And my dad saying, you know, you can do that. I don't care, but I want you to apply to CSUN, and I want you to put some serious thought into where you want to go.
Yeah.
And again, I was faced with that same decision of, okay, you know, my dad's a really smart guy, but I want to go off and I want to go to these, you know, very prestigious universities, which I ended up getting into. It was never a problem with my grades or aptitude for those schools. It was more of what was my choice. And so we're coming down to decision time, and I'm sitting there looking at the tuitions for all the schools and how much it would cost for room and board to leave and go live there, or how much, or what kind of car I would have to buy to commute, and all these different decisions. And again, completely ignoring the university that was closest to us.
I mean, it's kind of silly at this point, and now that everything's kind of gone on for it. I'll get to that. But the it's just, it's interesting because we had that mentality back in the day, you know?
So as the story unfolds, it gets even funnier as time progresses,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
So at the time, my dad, you know, was, and my dad's such a smart guy, so I listened to his opinion. I was like, you know what, if he says CSUN, I'll, like, at least look into it. So I turned my head and fully looked at CSUN, and I found out it's one of the top accounting programs in Southern California. It's right up there. The recruits right up there go with the SC groups, the USC, the UCLA, and SB are often recruited with CSUN, especially in Los Angeles County. It has a very high reputation among professionals, especially in the accounting area. And I'm sitting here, you know, shaking my head at myself, thinking, can I really go back now and say, hey, Dad, you're right, after putting up a huge fight to, you know, fly off to Berkeley and go live there?
Yeah.
And as time went on, I ended up choosing to go to CSUN, and it was probably one of the best decisions I've made in my young life. It provided me a great opportunity, not only of education, the people I surround myself with, the resources I have as an alumna of the university, just everything about that decision has provided me so much happiness and success. And to think that I was so concentrated on making the wrong decision and making a decision for the wrong reasons, which would have been, you know, pride. A lot of it would have come down to me wanting to be seen in a certain way, comparing to people that I graduated high school with, or even my own family, and realizing how much better life is not having that much student debt and having a great job and great people around me.
It's the reason why we were making a comment earlier is just that I recently got into the master's program for CSUN. I was in the same boat. I went to a local high school. And a lot of my friends had gone there. I decided that I also went to community college because I didn't really know, and I'll get to that story in a second. But right now I'm going to be getting my master's in psychology, and I also didn't think I would be end up at CSUN. I was very vehemently against it, but it seems to draw us all in one way or another. And it's not, and I think it's that kind of perspective. You don't have a perspective of it until you're there or you're even in it. I don't think you were super thrilled about CSUN when you got there originally. Like, you liked it.
I was okay.
You had liked it. I just remember you just not being like, you know, it's okay, school. Like, has a decent program.
And that was before I actually started the accounting program. Right. I didn't really know that, like, the prestige of the accounting program and how intense it was and what it really prepared you for. And, you know, looking back now and, you know, seeing stubborn Jessica at 2021, trying to tell herself, oh, no, you need to go to these Ivy League schools, which there's nothing against them at all. I mean, I highly support anyone that can afford it or goes. And, you know, if that's what you want to do, I 10,000% behind you. But for me, this ended up being one of the best decisions I've ever made. And
I mean, the thing is that you got to know a lot of people right off the gate.
And well, I needed CSUN. The way CSUN's structured, the teachers, the faculty in my department are incredible.
Right.
I still get happy birthdays from professors I haven't seen in 2 years, and that's the type of environment that I thrive in. And so, not that that doesn't happen at other schools, I'm not really sure, but I know that for sure it happens there, and that's something that's really important to me.
Right. And so it just ended up being a decision that, even though you thought was going to be wrong, it's wrong in a good way. It's like you had thought it was going to be a lot
be terrible. I thought I was going to leave there and not have a job and just be another statistic of the San Fernando Valley girl that's working at the mall.
My other college story is because the reason I had originally gone to community college is that I had gone into San Jose State University out of college or out of high school, and what ended up happening is that I was kind of pumped for that. That was the best school I got. They had a pretty decent, I did psych as a program, and they had a really decent one, and I was really cool to go, and I ended up getting into orientation. And when I went up to orientation, we spent the night there. I went all of the groups. And there's just something that didn't sit right with me. After all of this kind of debating over months of, like, going through all the different types of colleges I had gone into, and I had meticulously kind of narrowed it down to San Jose, I was like, this is not the school for me. It felt very much like high school. And I was like, this is not where I want
to
be.
Well, and on top of that, I mean, we had already prepared for you to start moving out, like things.
Yeah, we had
bought. It was a last minute change in decision. It wasn't necessarily, you know.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I was very gung-ho for this. Like,
we already bought the sweatshirts.
We had.
we all had the family sweatshirts already.
And, like, that was the point is that, like, I had visited the campus before and I had seen it and it was really good. But once I got there and I was really in that environment, it was just something didn't sit right. And I knew I had made I had to make a very hard decision of whether I wanted to stay or go. And I ended up not going. And I was very, like, I'm happy with the decision now and the way things worked because I ended up going to UC Riverside, which was a lot, again, that for me, that was a lot better environment. But I had to sit through 2 years at a community college, and that's definitely not where I had seen myself. Like, that was... and it kind of led me down this path that I didn't really like. I honestly couldn't see... from where I started, having to do that and backtrack so much, it was a great lesson in that usually when you're doing things, go with your gut on the decision, because if you're not feeling comfortable, it's either fear or something else, and like you have to really examine that. And like I spent like 2 weeks just examining that after we had that I had come back from orientation. It was agonizing too, but I ended up making the right decision at the end of the day, and that's something I'm very proud of, is the fact that I actually made a decision. And I was wrong, and I was wrong about the school I had originally chosen, but it ended up leading to a different route that I, again, couldn't see, but I ended up really enjoying. And, like, obviously, this is the route. I can't say what would have happened if I had gone to the school, but I'm really happy with the way this has gone in one way or another.
Yeah, and I can kind of see where you're talking about, especially, and I think, you know, anyone that knows me on here knows that this last year has been a life-changing year in a lot of ways for me.
Seems like 20s are that time for that.
Yeah, and I just feel like this last 365 days has definitely been a turnaround, a definite 180. Plans that I thought for my future were solid, and that, you know, I had my 10-year plan, 10, 5, and 3-year plan down, no longer exist.
Yeah.
And it's been a trying period, but there's, you know, one specific decision that really sticks out to me.
Yeah.
And last June, I finally... moved out of my parents' house.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and a little push.
Yeah, a little push. My mom said get out, so I left. And, you know, in wanting to, you know, listen to her and respect her wishes as far as the timeline, you know, I had to make some pretty swift decisions as to where I was going to live and whom I was going to live with.
Yeah.
And in that time period, I had a best friend for... 6 or 7 years at this point.
You met originally when you had gotten a job at Magic Mountain.
Yeah, so I was working my first
not your
serial minimum wage job. Yeah. I was there for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And he was one of my bosses, and he became my gay best friend, and it was awesome.
It was the thing that is like I even knew him.
Our whole family. Like he came to family events. He went on birthday vacations. He would stay at the house when I wasn't home. You know, like being the pretend Jessica, I guess, for the time being.
I guess, yeah. That's it's just that he was very much a part of our lives
And our family.
Yeah,
and all my friends. I mean, everyone. I'm very open and inclusive with my friend group, so everyone kind of co-mingles. And he was definitely, you know, one of the people that every one of my friends knew. And I knew I felt comfortable with him, and I knew that living together would be easy since we had spent so much time together in living situations. Like, I think he basically lived out with us for about 2.5 months before
I
moved out. So, you know, I had a significant other at the time, and he wasn't the happiest about that decision. You know, he had some very big fears about me moving in with him just because... you know, my best friend wasn't exactly the most stable person financially. as well as, you know, he wasn't really sure what was going on with his life and how
he was in the time of transition for sure.
Yeah. I mean, he had just graduated his own schooling and, you know, he was looking for his job and, you know, I blew past everyone's opinions on it and said, you know, like, he's going to treat me well. He's going to be a great roommate. Like, I love him. I respect him and he feels the same about me. And, you know, I was very stubborn in my attitude towards it. There are a lot of people that were really worried and concerned about this decision. And I was stubborn and I was very trusting in the fact that I believed that he would be there for me no matter what.
I think I was on the same boat as you when you had done this, because again, he is someone who had been around for a really long time. My mom was on the same boat. We didn't think it would go to the way it will, the rest of the story goes.
Yeah, and I'm not going to, you know, get into too many details because this isn't about embarrassing him or, you know, talking too much about myself. But, you know, he made some decisions that were absolutely disrespectful to me and very selfish and very self-centered. And at the end of the day, I remember getting in a really big fight with him and being like, you know, I'd rather live with a random person than live with you. And his response was, well, I can be a random person. We don't have to be friends. And
right. Yeah, I mean, that's over a place too. It's
like, and it was over a living situation, which he was not qualified to live here. The only person that was qualified was me, and it was just a mess. And, you know, this situation went on for months and months and months, and I really tried to work through it and make things work and at least be civil for the remainder of our lease. And I just realized at some point, like, my quality of life and my happiness was, you know, going down the drain, because I was pushing myself to be someone I wasn't, and I was expecting things from him that he would never fulfill. As a friend, he couldn't be respectful to me. He had his own stuff going on, and there's his own problems, and those would not allow him to respect me the way I needed to be respected.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like having a friend and a roommate is just, it's very difficult, I think, in some ways. And it's like, I have a lot of good friends and, like, I don't know if I'd be really good roommates with them, but it's, you want to try because it's like, they're a familiar face and they kind of in some way respect you when you go in, you know?
There's that whole, I mean, but he made some decisions that were just,
I mean, yeah. Okay. The point is that at the end of the day, he made decisions that weren't exactly,
they weren't nice to anyone you would be living with, let alone a friend. So as a roommate, he just wasn't a great roommate. And then on top of it, as supposedly my best friend, it was even more hurtful.
Right.
And I finally had to come to the decision that no matter what the stakes were, I would not be living with him anymore.
Right.
And I went through an entire period of regret and of, you know, triple thinking things. And I'm not a nervous person at all. It takes a lot for me to be nervous, and then it would take a lot for me to be anxious. But this was the first time in my life where, like, I found out that I had sweaty palms, and it was something that I definitely didn't want to deal with, because I knew not only would my living situation be in danger, but, you know, I'm losing this friend. And so I sat there and I made the decision, and I realized that the humility in being wrong and the humility of accepting your mistakes and learning from them was one of the biggest lessons I needed to learn for this year and this time in my life. And, you know, admitting that I was wrong and coming to my parents and being like, you know I'm old, but I need help.
Yeah.
And I need you to be here for this, and I really need you to just support me, was hard and extremely humbling. But the grace in falling and the grace in accepting my mistakes has led to such a better and happier and more free life. And I encourage anyone that's in a situation that's listening to this that is affecting their home life. You might not realize the emotional toll that it's taking on you until it's over. But when you get your home life settled and you're in a place where you're actually happy, you'll notice that that transitions and that is reflected in the rest of your life. So not only was I wrong about the friendship and the person that he was, I was wrong in my decision to live with him. And that took a lot. And it took a lot for me to admit it to, you know, not only family, but my landlord and everyone else that was involved with this. So if anything, this has taught me that, like, it is totally 100% to be okay and be wrong. But just make sure that you're living up to that and saying that, you know, you made a mistake and that you're going to fix it. And that in any way, shape, or form, you feel like you can rectify it, do that.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been a lot worse for me and for now Matthew, and he's living with me, if I hadn't come to terms with the fact that I was wrong and hadn't handled it the way I did, with as much grace and compassion as possible, that it would have been a lot messier of a situation and probably would have ended very badly on multiple levels.
Yeah. It was a tough situation, but it's that thing where it's like when you admit that you're wrong or in some way that you're kind of come to grips with the fact that the decision may have not panned out the way you want to, it ends up doing you better because then you can actually start moving on the fact that on the new decision. One of my teachers back in high school told me it's okay to change your mind, that if you change your mind, the next best thing to do is to kind of go full force for the next answer. And it's okay to kind of go back and forth, but as long as you're doing it kind of with as much kind of gusto as possible, you'll end up doing pretty okay. That's something that I've had to come to grips with because, growing up, I was a bit of a know-it-all. I am still a bit of a know-it-all, but at least I'm willing to admit that I'm wrong, when I am wrong, because I am wrong. But in school and like in life, it gets kind of to this point where I'll say something and I'll believe it 100%. Like when I say something, I'll believe it, whatever I'm saying, but it gets to the point where if I get corrected back in the day, you just get angry, you know, like, or just like, and you're just kind of skeptical of whatever information, and it kind of takes you away from like having kind of those relationships because of the fact that you're like, hey, you know, it's something, and like someone's it feels like disrespect almost, and it's like, well, you believe me, and it's a very silly thing. And again, this is when I was a kid, so like you have to forgive me for that. But it's just knowing when you're going, and like I want to do research and do psych research in the future, and one of the big things that is important is to know that you're not always going to be right. Like, you can't know everything, and one of the big actually issues in psych research is the fact that, and actually with doctors, researchers, and all this other stuff, is that huge major experts in the field are having a problem saying is that I don't know. Like, I don't know the answer. And it's come to problems where people are starting to make a lot of conjecture about something. So a doctor, instead of saying, I don't know what the problem is with your with that kind of those symptoms, and kind of going like, if I spend some more time with this, or I'm going to hand it off to a friend, they'll just try to come up with an answer because it's kind of what they feel that they should expect. And it gets into more harm than good. It's just, if you admit that you don't know, it's like, yeah, there's a learning opportunity and an ability to kind of learn from your mistakes, or even learn from the fact that, hey, I might not be an expert in this field, but I can at least do something about that. But it's kind of admitting that you could be wrong or you don't really know. That's the point. And I want to become someone who in the future is just able to do that. And I've really worked on that because I'm more interested in the right answer than I am the wrong one. And science is, even though it has exact answers, is not a totally exact thing.
It's not perfect. So I think another point to be taken isn't necessarily when either of us have been wrong, which we'll get into more stories about that, but it's accepting when someone you love is wrong and how that situation pans out. So I had a very good friend of mine who was in a very messy relationship.
Right.
And they were together for a couple of years, and they finally broke up, and, you know, she was obviously hurt and he was hurt too, and, you know, they were going through the breakup, and she decided to date my significant other at the time's best friend, mm-hmm. which obviously ended up not working out as well. And I remember turning to her and saying, you know, I love you. You're one of my best friends, but I can't see you get back with your ex. And if that's a decision you're going to make, it's unhealthy for you and it's unhealthy for him. And I don't know that I can really stay here through it. And not that I think that was the best decision to make or statement to make at all. Like, I'm not giving myself validity in that, but it definitely was something that I knew wouldn't be healthy. And, you know, her and her ex ended up reconciling, getting back together for a few years, and now they've officially broken up again. And he's off seeing other people and doing his own thing. And right.
Fell out of step with each other after
that. Yeah, after that. That was definitely like a huge change in our relationship because she felt I didn't respect her decisions, when it was more of just like, I can see this and you can't, and I totally understand being involved and being in a relationship that you don't see those things. but, you know, you need to really see this for what it is. And, you know, recently I spoke with her and I kind of asked her, you know, like, how did everything go? And she was just like, I couldn't believe I was so wrong. And, you know, I think, you know, for her to say that, it took a lot of strength of character to admit, especially when that was such a huge crux in our relationship that changed everything. But the other side of it was, I realized how much compassion and humility and not happiness, I wouldn't use that word, but like contentment that you need to show and caring you need to show someone that will admit that they're wrong.
So, well, yeah, it's not about rubbing in their face.
You know, right,
it's
obviously. Like, I mean, but there's so many levels of when a person finally admits to you that they were wrong, how you react to that can change that person's life as well as your own.
Right.
And I think that's something that's less talked about is, you know, sometimes it's easier to admit that you're wrong than it is to accept when someone else is. And so that's something I wanted to bring up and, you know, kind of food for thought is, you know, how do you react when someone comes to you and says that you're wrong, that they are wrong, and they're asking for not even forgiveness, but just even
acknowledgement
of it and how you react to that. And a lot of things are bigger than just a breakup or bigger than just a friendship ending. A lot of it can come down to, you know, like, fundamentally, like, I said something that was so completely out of character and wrong.
Well, it's just a moment that you, it's not a, like, you don't have to capitalize on the moment, but it's just a moment where you can really be honest with someone and go, like, it's not the fact that I want you to be wrong. It's not that this kind of like this from what like our this contention is or where you were going. It's like, I don't really care that you were wrong. Like, it's, I was saying you were wrong. Like, we had this conversation because I care. And if you realize that you're wrong, it's like, that's fine on your own. Like, it's a beautiful thing. And like you like coming to fruition kind of on that thought. But it's about kind of picking up where you left off and going, I know we've kind of missed a step, but it's like, I still care. And it's like, I still want to keep moving forward because you coming to me is actually something that is very good. Like, it's, I don't really know how to describe it, but it's just, it's an opening up and being able to not kind of shove it in their face, but go like, hey, it doesn't really matter if I was wrong or right. It just matters kind of what happens next.
Yeah. And I think that especially in our culture,
right.
With social media and with everything else that we are blasted with daily, we are so focused on when people make the wrong decision.
Yeah, make mistakes.
And, you know, some people I mean, you kind of have to flash the celebrities on this. Like, some celebrities handle wrong decisions with so much grace that it, for me, it really, like, increases their clout and their... And my opinion of them has obviously increased, no matter what the mistake was. But in a world where there's no stopping social media and there's no telling, you know, information is instant. And someone, you know, regardless of who you are, can find out your mistake rather easily through any means of communication.
Mm-hmm.
Now more than ever, I think it's more about learning compassion in failure.
Right.
And learning compassion in your own failure and learning compassion in others.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Kind of a segue in a different direction is that like, especially with parenting. Now, my sister and I, neither of us are parents, so we have a lot of respect for people who are and are parents for in general, just because they had to put up with my sister and I, which is no easy task. But I remember actually back in the day, one of the great getting in trouble hijinks of our time was my dad had gotten a rental car, and my sister had thought it would be hilarious for me. I was small at the time, so I was either 6 or 7 or something.
Yeah.
And she was 8 or 9. So and she thought it would be hilarious for me to hide in the trunk. So we all get out, and I don't know if my dad didn't see me.
Like, well, Matthew was a wanderer as well, so it would not be unusual for him to wander forward without
anyone
knowing.
Yeah. So, but I didn't. I sat like so it was one of those cars that had the open trunk kind of plan. So when I jumped into the car, my sister's like, jump into the back of the car. It's the first time we actually had that, and just go like and stay quiet. Like that's
all you have to do.
Just stay quiet.
And I'm just gonna, you know, trick dad and say like, where's Matthew? And you know.
Right.
We obviously think that's hilarious.
That's funny. I was a wanderer, and I still am in some sort of way. I don't have a sense of direction, so when I wander around, I won't be able to find my way back. So it was an issue, a big enough issue where it was like, oh no. And for some reason, this is the only command that I ever remember, like, really following up to this point. It's just, stay quiet in the trunk, don't move. Like, that was like, all right, that seems like a great idea. So, and it's like, and I, my dad's like, okay, I don't know where he went. So he starts driving up and down the block, like, freaking out. My sister, in perfect character, decided, like, to, I don't know why this all came together perfectly, but, like, she was like, oh, I don't really know. I can't see him. Like, I don't know where this is. And, like, it got to the point where he's, like, he's legitimately concerned. And it was like,
I'm still laughing.
I know. It is. Because you weren't as yelled at as much as I was back in the day for that. But so I pop out eventually. Like, it just gets too much. I sat there for too long.
I think it was the point where our dad was going to call our mom. And we kind of realized, like,
this is serious.
It's time. And mind you, to, like, paint the scene a little bit more, my dad, we lived in an apartment complex.
Right.
And this apartment complex was one of many complexes. Yeah,
so they were all next to each other in those different buildings.
We were parked in the carport, which had, like, a single stairway up to our apartment. So it wasn't, like, you know, typically he couldn't have gone too far without anyone seeing. And so my dad's driving.
I think we had just come back from someplace.
That's probably the grocery store or something, like, similar to that. So it wasn't like we were, you know.
Yeah.
It was a cause of concern when a small child went missing in, like, a carport area and that they were not immediately found.
Right.
Especially, you know, we were probably yelling for you, too. Which...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure that you were. I was staying silent in the trunk. so I don't really remember that part. I just remember how warm and nice. It was nice. Like, since it was a rental car that we had, it was just, like, I remember, actually, the texture of the carpet in the back there was really nice. And I felt like I wanted to go fall asleep. Obviously, I couldn't because of all the shouting for my name, for whatever reason, for me getting lost. But,
And, I mean, to kind of also say, like, we were at the point where we used to play hide-and-seek a lot inside the house. So
okay, there's no
like...
really... Okay, she's trying to put it lightly, but I popped out, and my dad's like, why didn't you pop out before?
And then he said, because Jessica told me.
Yeah, because Jessica told me not to.
And I think my immediate response was like, well,
I don't
could have told him. I didn't tell you to do it for that long.
Yeah, I didn't... Why didn't you just pop out before? We were all worried about you. she played the game. I was too young too, so like.
Oh, but I just got punished plenty for playing that game.
Yeah,
I think I probably got punished more for that than you.
I don't know.
That was one of the very memorable yellings of our childhood.
Yeah, just because it was like he was legitimately worried. I'm sure it's just playing that. It's to us, it's funny. to him, it's
so
like
funny
the, it's
to you, which is sad.
It's just the literal worst thing that could ever happen is to lose your child and then like contemplate having to call like your ex-wife to go like, oh my god, I don't know where he is. If you can help me find him, like
if one time wasn't enough,
I feel like that's either that or 911 he was trying to call. Yeah, if one time wasn't,
it wasn't one time wasn't enough.
Like
we're apparently very hard learning.
Yeah, we really had difficulty with concepts that we thought were funny. So
that's why we were in so much trouble in our youth. But you know, we decided to play this trick again, but not on my dad, on my mom.
Yeah, because you know it doesn't work twice. You don't want that to happen.
So. Yeah, so you're gonna definitely try the other parent. And our parents were divorced, so there was no way that they would know. I mean, my mom wouldn't know that we did this to my dad. So
Or think that we would do it to her, especially after
doing it to my dad. So I will never forget this day because it was quite. Extreme.
It was
so my mom and my grandmother was in town from Northern California, and it was Easter Sunday.
Easter
Sunday.
And what a great day to do that.
We were going to early morning church. Mm-hmm. We were going to mass early, and we were going to go join like all of our family friends for like the Easter egg hunt and everything after that.
Right. Yeah.
So it was pretty early in the morning, and again, I think Matthew and I were. Around the same age, maybe.
No, I think it was a year or two
before,
after that. We need to let the joke cool off before we
tried it again. That. Yeah, so I mean, I remember being under 10, and you would have been under 10 too.
Right.
So, you know, we decided that my mom and my grandmother were taking way too long to get ready, and we did not want to wait anymore.
So
we decided, again, to hide in the backseat of the car.
Right.
And we didn't want to go to anyone. We didn't want to go to church. That was what it was. We didn't want to go to church, and we were already running late.
Yeah.
And so we were like, we just want to go over to our family friend's house and, you know, enjoy chocolate.
Right.
So we decided to hide in the backseat of the car and have mom look for us, and hopefully the time would run out and we wouldn't have to go to church.
I mean, I just remember wanting to hide in the car. I don't exactly remember why.
I remember the whole scheme because I probably had a bigger hand in coming up with it. Yeah. So
as an impressionable youth, she corrupted me.
That's how that worked. Whatever. So we get into the backseat of the car, and at this time, my mom was having her front yard redone. So
yeah, front porch and everything.
Yeah. So there was, you know, ginormous
rocks.
Holes,
yeah, there was
and
rocks and dirt
and construction equipment all over the front. So my mom, you know, in typical parent fashion, is screaming for both of us, and both of us are snickering to ourselves in the car, thinking like, "Oh, we're not going to church today."
I know. I that's what I remember from the story is that we were sitting in the car, and my mom's yelling like the loudest she can because she's both frustrated and worried. But
I think
she's,
we're frustrated. Yeah. She knew we were somewhere.
We were.
She definitely wasn't. I mean, it wasn't.
We were
the
mischievous.
Same. So. Yeah, it wasn't the same. I mean, she had a large house, so it was a little easier for us to probably hide.
Yeah.
Versus my dad, we went missing in the driveway.
I remember sitting in the.
So my
car.
Mom's screaming, and like we're hearing her from the outside. I mean, if we're hearing
laughing
her through, we're laughing. We think it's hilarious, and you know, if we're hearing her, obviously our neighbors are hearing her too. So, and I remember this moment because I was looking and I probably should have just pretended to still be in the bottom seat of the car, but my mom finally opens the front door and is screaming out the front door for us. And
she's like, yeah,
she's pissed. Like she's, and at this point, Matthew and I are like, we don't even want to say that we're in the car because
we just want to kind of show up.
We know the hell that's about to come. We were trying to think, you know. We were trying to scheme to actually get back into the house at that point.
And be like, oh, we didn't hear you.
Yeah, we were in the back, whatever. So my mom, my grandma's following her, you know. My grandma, I think, knew we were doing something stupid, so I don't think she was quite as concerned. But my mom walks out of the house, and I think at this point we decided to, like, give up, so we pop our heads out of the car.
No, I don't.
No.
No, we don't. She...
Oh, okay. Well, she...
We do that after.
So, this is...
Just wait for the greatness of this.
I'm watching her. That's why I didn't know. So I see my mom. We both see her walk out of the house, and she's screaming red in the face, like very unattractive, like, you know, that full body angry. And she steps into a construction hole and twists her ankle. And the plethora of curse words that were screamed at the top of her lungs bring our neighbors out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was
a residential area, so like,
it was deaf, and we were close to our neighbors. It wasn't like we didn't know these people. And yeah, you're right. So our neighbor pops up, and she's crying and pissed, and
she's
sitting
on the ground, like frustrated,
beside herself. Yeah. And then Matthew and I decided to, you know, finally be like, "Hey, we're in the car, waiting for you." So speak about being wrong more than once with the same idea.
We got our own
tongue lashing.
Yeah. From that.
And we definitely still went to church.
We did.
We did not get out of church at all. And in fact, I feel like that was probably one of the most
We sat there silent. We didn't talk. I just remember feeling the heat from just the anger on the back of my neck the whole time, because it was just like, oh, it was a silent one. Because it was like my grandma was there. My grandma was like, I'm not going to talk about this if you guys aren't going to talk about this. So we just sat in the back of the car, and it's just like no radio, no nothing. It's just us, the car, my grandmother, and my mom.
I mean, even me then, though, I would talk out of turn, and my mom was like, shut up.
Yeah, just stop. Like, you have no room to talk right now.
Don't try to talk yourself out of it. Don't try to just shut up. And I mean, I remember leaving, and she had originally obviously threatened to take away Easter activities because who blames her?
Yeah.
But, I remember when we did go, Matthew and I ran as far away from her as humanly possible. And I don't think we even tried to get near her for the rest of the day.
Yeah, no, for sure. That was... Oh, you know, actually, the Easter activities that we did actually was with a group of friends, and we all grew up together, and so it was really nice. But one of my friends, his name is Michael, who it was part of this group, and him and I were inseparable back in the day. But so we'd either be at his house or my house, and one of the memories I remember for, like, why, like, I'm very, like, cautious about what I do with my friends is because one time, like, we were playing tag or something, and as a, like, not as a purposeful and malicious thing, but we're going through a door, a set of doors, and I'm trying to close them as he's trying to get through, you know, I'm just trying to stop it down. So one of the things I did is that with all of my strength, I pulled the door closed, and it ended up closing on his fingers. I think he had thrown his fingers into the actual like door where it slides open, but to the where the frame is, where the frame and the hinges are. And I just remember him crying, and I started crying because he was crying. There was just that age where it was like, and I'm like, I'm so sorry, and he's just like so mad, and like, and my mom's like trying to like, because we were young. I think we were about 6 or 7 when we did this, but I just remember one of those things where it's like, I didn't like. You get snapped out of it immediately. Whatever game you're playing, you get snapped out of it immediately and realize, like, oh, I've done something wrong. And it's like, and it's that thing where it's like, I admit that I was doing something wrong. I didn't try to place blame on anything else. But it's also the fact that, like, after, like, the next day, we just kind of got back together and we were playing like normal. But it's because I think as kids, you don't really have to worry about kind of that kind of pride or esteem. It's like, oh no, I did something wrong, like I'm gonna say sorry immediately, like that's the end of that. But I mean like we did a lot of kind of silly things with our friends, and I think that's the beautiful thing is that if you have a right group of friends, you don't have to worry about being really prideful. You just kind of go like, yeah, I know they know I do stupid stuff, and like if I do something way too far, I'm gonna say sorry, and it's like that's the end of that because they know it's not malicious.
And I think, you know, going back to that friend group, like, my best friend is Julia, who we both grew up with, and that's something so beautiful, I think, that we've developed in our relationship is, like, I can go to her at any time and be like, Julia, I was wrong.
Yeah.
I was so wrong, and I was so, and it doesn't even have to do with us, you know, it could be about, like, taking class, or, you know, a bad relationship, or a friend I shouldn't have been friends with, or something that I, you know, did that was against who I am as a person. You know, fumbles of youth.
Yeah, fumbles.
And, you know, the beauty of it is she always just looks at me and she's like, yeah, but that doesn't define who you are.
Right.
And I think, you know, out of all of these stories, you know, hiding in trunks of cars from our parents, you know, getting them to the utmost frustration to, you know, making a bad choice with a friend and making a bad friendship, and talking about scientists, you know, proving wrong results just to be right. Yeah. The end of all of this, what really matters is it doesn't define, your mistakes don't define who you are.
Right. And it's okay.
And like it's okay to be wrong.
It's an okay to be wrong. That's a perfect way to end this. So this is again the 5th test cast. This is with my sister. I've been asking her for a while because I knew.
She knows how many times I've been wrong.
No. I know, like, she has the right stories for when I'm wrong as well. So it's also the fact that, like, it's good just to have those types of stories, and she's someone I can bounce off of. And so in the future, if she wants to continue doing this, I would love to have her continue doing this with me. We had talked about it before. So, and if you enjoyed this is again a test cast. So, first couple episodes are going to come. I'm going to do one more test cast, and I'm going to the first episode, official episode, and then I'll see, kind of throw a bunch of stuff against the wall and see what sticks. But I do want my sister to come back because she knows all of my my faults, and that seems to work well for storytelling. So,
and I have plenty.
Yeah. So, thank you for listening. Then this is Modern Fable, and I hope you have a